Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For sheer drama, FBI Director James Comey's last-minute decision to raise a big new question mark over next week's presidential election is a stunning plot twist in an already surreal campaign season. In terms of facts, so far, we know next to nothing. There is a computer that belongs to the estranged husband of a top Clinton aide. There are emails that might or might not be germane. That's about it. In terms of law and tradition, Comey's move is being debated furiously. There is no precedent this close to a presidential election. In terms of America's eroding confidence in the steadiness of its democratic system, it's another blow. Trump forces are gleeful, the Clinton camp up in arms. This hour on Point, James Comey's October surprise. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Did Comey do the right thing? Has he made a mistake? Did he have a choice? Will this change your vote? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We're going to hear a number of thoughtful voices today on the law and justice of this, on the politics, on the impact on the country, on potential new revelations on Hillary Clinton's private email server traffic. Joining me from Washington is Jeff Pagés, Justice Department correspondent for CBS News. He covers the FBI and more. Jeff, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
There's a search warrant. What does it say?
Well, it gives FBI investigators the authority to search these emails now, Huma Abedin's emails. They originally, Tom, they had the search warrant for her estranged husband's emails, former Congressman Anthony Weiner, in an unrelated, separate investigation. And so as of late Saturday, and really after FBI Director James Comey sent that letter to Congress, they still hadn't gotten the search warrant for Abedin's emails. And as of yesterday, they had it, so now they can start searching the emails.
They're investigating the estranged husband, Anthony Weiner, because of alleged sexting with a teenage girl. And in the process of that, they found links to what they're saying, Jeff?
Well, they found emails that may be pertinent or appear to be pertinent, going to Comey's language in that letter to members of Congress, to the Clinton private email server investigation. You know, the one that Comey seemed to wrap up on July 5th when he decided against recommending charges against Hillary Clinton. So just as we thought that investigation was in the past, the bombshell is that they are now looking at these new emails, and there are thousands of them that investigators tell us they believe belong to Abedin, who is Hillary Clinton's longtime aide. Some people say that she's like a daughter to the former Secretary of State. So now investigators are going to start digging through these emails that belong to Abedin. They want to see if there are any emails from Hillary Clinton in there that may contain classified information, but they don't know yet.
And of course, Abedin was at her side as well when she was Secretary of State. What would they be looking for that might change the, if it would at all, that could change the decision in July, announced in July, not to go forward with any case here?
They're looking for emails that they haven't seen before. That may have come from Secretary Clinton that may contain classified information. You know, as an outsider looking in, it's sort of hard to believe that there could be anything else because they have looked at tens of thousands of emails. But this is a fresh batch now that they will try to review.
Was Huma Abedin forthcoming with her emails from Secretary Clinton in the earlier investigation?
Well, investigators tell us that right now she is cooperating with them, and that she was, and this is the word of one of my sources, that she was surprised to find out that there were emails on this laptop that she shared with her estranged husband.
She shared the laptop. She was surprised. I mean, how could she be surprised? That presumably, it wouldn't make sense for Secretary Clinton to send them directly to Anthony Weiner, or am I misunderstanding something?
Well, you know, these are all questions that really need to be answered. But it sounds like, according to our reporting and some of the sources that we've spoken with over the course of the last 48 hours or so, this was a laptop that both Anthony Weiner and Abedin shared. There are a lot of homes these days where couples share computers.
Mm-hmm.
And so on this email, which contained hundreds of thousands of emails on this laptop, investigators have found a subset of emails that they believe belong to Abedin. Not hundreds of thousands, at least that's not what I'm hearing, but thousands of emails that they will now go through. And so it's going to be a relatively long process. You know, we've asked over and over again, and our law enforcement sources tell us that it doesn't look like this is something that they can wrap up before Election Day.
November 8th is only, 8 days away now. The director, there's a lot of reporting that there was a fierce debate within the Justice Department and FBI over whether or not this step should be taken to effectively make this public when the parameters were vague and the timetable for completing an investigation before the vote seems unrealistic. What was that fight like?
Well, the FBI is now in a position where, because since that July 5th announcement, FBI Director Comey had been getting grilled on Capitol Hill by members of Congress, and during one of those sessions, he pledged to them that he would keep them abreast if anything new related to the investigation popped up. Well, something popped up. And so he was in a position on Thursday, and this is what we're being told, that he needed, or they needed to decide, well, how are they going to inform members of Congress? And they were looking at different scenarios, and they were debating, well, should we keep it quiet and maybe reveal this at a later date? Well, no, we can't do that, because if we do that, then it looks like we're hiding something. Should we continue to investigate? Perhaps we find something and then reveal it after the election. Well, then there will be backlash with that option as well, and we will be accused of trying to manipulate the election. So, you know, all of these scenarios were not looking good to them, and this is according to a person who was familiar with the deliberations. All of these avenues were not looking good. The one credible avenue they thought was to go through Congress, notify Congress, as Comey pledged to do, and, you know, so at that point, we would have reached our obligations. He pledged to Congress that he would keep them informed. He has done that. Now, members of Congress leaked the information. The FBI didn't leak the information, is what they're telling us. It was members of Congress who leaked it. But James Comey satisfied his pledge to inform Congress if there was anything new that popped up.
Of course, he knows how Washington works. I guess giving this letter to them at the height of a campaign season, almost one and the same thing. Technically, is the investigation into Hillary Clinton's email server and what flowed there, is it reopened or not?
Technically, no, it's not reopened. Technically, it never closed. But, you know, is it all semantics? Well, it depends on who you ask. But technically, the probe never closed. And officially, this is just a review of these new emails. Again, they don't know what they're going to find yet. They say that they don't know whether it's going to be anything of significance that will ultimately change the outcome. But these are emails that they are reviewing now.
Jeff Pagaz with CBS News, covering the Justice Department in Washington. Jeff, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Donald Trump was all over this. Here he is in Phoenix, Arizona, on Saturday, hailing the letter from FBI Director James Comey.
This is the biggest political scandal since Watergate. And it's everybody's deepest hope that justice at last will be beautifully delivered.
Of course, lock her up, a big chant at Trump rallies for months here. Hillary Clinton in Daytona Beach on Saturday, same, saying, wait a minute, what about the timing here?
It's pretty strange to put something like that out with such little information right before an election.
But here we are. With me right now from Harvard Law School is Lawrence Tribe. Professor Lawrence Tribe, thank you very much for joining us today. What do you see in the timing and substance of the Comey letter?
Well, I think it was most unfortunate. In my view, it violates basic principles of keeping an investigation in-house and not dribbling things out, whether to Congress or anyone else. Just this morning, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, who is not among Comey's critics in this context.
George W. Bush's Attorney General, U.S.
Exactly.
Attorney General.
And he said, and I'm quoting, what Comey did, quote, obviously put at risk the election, unquote. Now, nothing could be more problematic for democracy. That's why we have all of these rules and guidelines about not putting out stuff at the last minute, indeed in the last 60 days. This was probably not criminal. I know that some people have suggested that Comey violated the Hatch Act. Indeed, Harry Reid has suggested it.
Yep.
But the Hatch Act is not a criminal statute in any way. The language of it applies only when you use your official authority or influence for the purpose of interfering with or affecting the result of an election. I don't think that that was his purpose, but he certainly was reckless.
What is it, what about his promise to Congress to keep them informed as any news came in?
Well, that's sort of hoisting himself on his own petard. I mean, he had no obligation to make Congress sort of a partner in this process. Indeed, it violates the most fundamental principles of criminal investigation, and that's what was going on vis-a-vis the Hillary Clinton server and also vis-a-vis the sexting by Mr. Weiner. No obligation to sort of keep whispering or shouting the intermediate results.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the FBI stepping back into the 2016 campaign with talk of emails and Hillary Clinton. So far, vague but big October surprise now, 8 days before the election. You can join us this hour. Does it look to you like it's right for the FBI to be back in the middle of the campaign, to be back there now? Was FBI Director James Comey right to go public with this via the Congress? Did he have a choice? Was he right to go public when the facts remain unclear? Should he have stayed mum just now until after the voting? Was he right to jump in? Donald Trump in Manchester, New Hampshire on Friday said there was a big mistake when the FBI had not moved on this in July, celebrating on Friday.
I have great respect for the fact that the FBI and the Department of Justice are now willing to have the courage to right the horrible mistake that they made.
And here Trump in Las Vegas yesterday.
Hillary has nobody but herself to blame for her mounting legal problems.
Hillary Clinton in Des Moines, Iowa on Friday saying no change here.
The director himself has said he doesn't know whether the emails referenced in his letter are significant or not. I'm confident whatever they are will not change the conclusion reached in July.
And yesterday in Florida, her campaign won't be knocked off track, but we'll see.
We won't be distracted no matter what our opponents throw at us. We're not going to be knocked off course. We know how much this election matters, and we know how many people are counting on us.
We're looking at what Comey's done here, whether it's the right thing, the wrong thing, precedent, and much more. Lawrence Tribe is with us, professor at Harvard Law School. He's been in the middle of big political and judicial proceedings for a long time. Jonathan Turley, professor at George Washington University Law School, is with us as well right now from McLean, Virginia. Jonathan Turley, welcome to On Point. Thank you for joining us. Has James Comey done the right thing here?
Well, it's very hard to know because we know so very little. I think what is clear is that the suggestion that this is a violation of the Hatch Act, I think, is just facially absurd.
Which prohibits federal employees from getting in the middle of politics.
Right. Section 7323 says that officials can't use their authority or influence for the purpose of interfering with or affecting the result of an election. Mm-hmm. A lot of that turns on intent, but I find it absolutely bizarre that people would be continuing to suggest a Hatch Act violation. It just that dog won't hunt. Now, there's certainly a fair basis on which to question the timing of FBI Director Comey's disclosure to Congress. I think that from his perspective, he was caught between the horns of a dilemma. He would be accused either of an act of commission or omission. You know, if this is in fact a serious matter, the concern could be that after the election, people would say, well, you withheld information that was material. At least you should have let Congress know that there was a new aspect to this investigation. On the other hand, if you make the disclosure, you have the controversies that you have now. He erred on the side of disclosure. I tend to have a very robust view of congressional oversight, so I tend not to criticize agencies communicating with oversight committees as to the status of these types of investigations. But I do think that there's legitimate questions here. It obviously is a rare thing. It's not unheard of. We've had October surprises before.
I'm reading in many sources here, no precedent for an FBI director at this point in a presidential campaign season to step in this fashion. No precedent, I'm reading.
I think that sort of narrowly constructs the question. I mean, in 1992, the feds indicted former Reagan defense secretary Caspar Weinberger literally days before the election, and that involved the Iran-Contra affair, which also involved President Bush, and he went on to lose that election, and many people were deeply aggrieved with that as well. The rule for the FBI not to make actions or statements before an election is a policy, and they are allowed to balance it. It's not a vow of silence. They're allowed to make a decision. Now, whether Comey made the right decision here, I think is largely going to be a judgment of history once we know exactly what they're dealing with. I mean, the irony from Comey's perspective is he actually disclosed very little, and the Clinton people are saying, well, you should have, if you're going to disclose, you should disclose more. But he really disclosed the minimum. He told Congress, we do have an ongoing investigation, particularly linked to this new discovery.
Lawrence Tribe, yes, please. Yeah, what about the timing? Did he have a choice? If he had something new on his plate, did he have to discuss it with Congress?
Of course not. The point is that investigations are going on all the time. I mean, there's a good reason to think that the Department of Justice, through the FBI, is investigating possible links between the Trump campaign and powerful sources in Russia, like Vladimir Putin.
Harry Reid is asserting this and saying, put that out there, put that out there.
But it would be wrong to do that as well, and you can imagine how Donald Trump would react. It seems to me that what Comey did in July was also wrong, but two wrongs don't make a right. When he decided not to indict, that should have been the end of it. As George Will said yesterday, the I in Federal Bureau of Investigation stands for investigation, not for keeping everybody informed of the status of an investigation. The irony here, too, is that what made this an October surprise is that it was really so empty. It was uninformative. It was misleading. There was damaging innuendo. He didn't reopen a criminal investigation. It really was political dynamite, but a legal fizzle. It's like T.S. Eliot's Hollow Men, this is the way the world ends. Not with a bang, but a whimper. And this whimper will reverberate through history. Now, the idea that if something terrible shows up later on, mm-hmm. he would be blamed for not leaking it, that's not true. It's simply the case that he would have followed guidelines and protocol of not tipping his hand before he had decided whether anything indictable had
What about his promise of transparency to Congress? Was that a mistake in and of itself,
Absolutely.
Or do they have appropriate oversight here?
No, the oversight, they could have had closed hearings on the procedures of the FBI, but oversight does not include being in the room where it happens when it comes to investigation. That's why investigations are normally held very close to the chest. In this case, he didn't even have a warrant yet, although he has one now.
Yes.
Well,
to search the emails. So he didn't really know what it was, but he simply said, I better let everyone know that I don't know. And it was predictable, though, of course, I agree, and I have said that it was not demonstrably for the purpose of interfering with the election. It was predictable that it would do just that.
Well,
Jonathan Turley, can it be that his promise of transparency to Congress is more important than the tradition of not throwing bombshells into the middle of a presidential campaign?
Well, all of this is a balance. I don't disagree with much of what Larry said. I think these are all well-made points, certainly. But I do think that it's easy to be unfair to Comey in this circumstance. This is a unique profile in one sense. You know, for no reason tied to Comey, the investigation into the emails exploded within the very center of a presidential election, and it has remained perhaps one of the two or three top issues in the presidential election. So he's dealing with something that is already affecting and part of this presidential debate. I think that his desire for transparency was to try to preserve neutrality, to not make greatly detailed disclosures about things like this investigation, but to try to keep Congress and the public informed on what was already a matter of great public concern and debate. Now, if he made that decision incorrectly, we can certainly debate that, but I think you can understand his motivations. I don't think anyone who knows Comey would ever suggest that he is trying to influence the election.
Larry Tribe, do you buy that? And what about the No Hatch Act problem assertion
first
here?
First of all, I've said I don't think it technically violates the Hatch Act, but it certainly violates its spirit. And the idea that fairness to Comey is the high value here, that really disturbs me. I admire Comey. I like the guy. I think he is a person of integrity. But we're talking about fairness to democracy, fairness to the entire nation. And it seems to me there'd be nothing unfair about holding someone accountable and indeed relieving him of his post if he takes on the job of a rogue junior varsity attorney general. That's not the role of the FBI director. It's true that there is a kind of balance to be struck, but DOJ policy, as expressed most recently in a memo this March, is that when there is a consideration on each side of disclosure or non-disclosure, the policy of not saying anything in the middle of a campaign trumps, as it were. It seems to me, you know, if Comey had ever been in the U.S. Navy, he would have learned the lesson that loose lips sink ships.
Well,
and here it's the ship of state that's at issue.
You know, I think that that's getting a bit ahead of our skis on this one. I mean, I think that the irony is that in the past, the way this type of thing was handled is that there'd be a leak. You know, that in the past when the FBI was investigating something, someone would give a leak and nobody would be accused of making disclosure. Instead, Comey went to Congress and said, look, here's the record. This thing would have leaked very likely on its own.
It's a big difference. Leaks, we know how to discount them. There are leaks and counter-leaks. But when the director of the FBI stands up before the nation, explains in great detail why in July he thinks that Hillary Clinton did all kinds of terrible stuff, but why it's not something that a reasonable prosecutor would pursue, he's already doing way more than leaking. He is planting the flag of the FBI right in the middle of the election.
The criticism that I disagree wholeheartedly with that. I think that Comey had to explain the results of that investigation. I mean, this country is divided right down the middle, but an overwhelming number of voters believe that there is a dual system of justice in this country, that people like Clinton and Petraeus and Sandy Berger are treated differently from other people. And as someone who's litigated these cases in national security, I have to confess I'm sympathetic to that view. I think that the way that these people have been treated is demonstrably different from my client. So I think what Comey was doing was making a disclosure to try to assure the public that this is a one, you know, system approach, that he didn't cut any favors.
No, I think it's very important not to make appearances trump the security of democracy. I was working with Lawrence Walsh when the decision was made to bring down an indictment, the one you mentioned earlier, of Cap Weinberger, just before the election. I disagreed with that decision. I think it's wrong. I think one should not, and especially when there's no indictment, but simply looking at a whole bunch of emails that may or may not be significant by his own admission, there's a very good reason not to suddenly make a big sort of explosion out of it and thereby unsettle the Republic. It seems to me that that is the transcendent.
But Larry, I mean, perhaps we can keep this more in perspective. I mean, it's not like Comey went to Congress and made these outrageous claims. He simply informed Congress that this was an ongoing investigation, which it was. People say it was reopened. We can disagree with the rhetoric. But he was informing Congress.
Jonathan, everyone knew that the investigation had not been formally closed. It seems to me that it's like jumping halfway across a chasm. He didn't get to the other end and really inform the nation, so we remain in suspense. But there is a terrible cloud of innuendo over the major candidate of one political party. If that were done to Donald Trump, he would say the system is rigged by making me look bad before you know that I've done anything wrong. That's the transcendent value. I just think that we have to, you keep talking about putting it in perspective. I think the perspective of not interfering with an ongoing national election should count more than the perspective of covering your behind.
And here we are 8 days before the election. Lawrence Tribe, I know we have to let you go, professor at Harvard Law School. Thank you very much, Larry, for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And good to you too. And Jonathan Turley at George Washington University Law School. Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us here.
Thank you, Tom.
I want to turn to Margaret Tolliff. She's covering the Clinton campaign. Margaret, how is this going down? I'm seeing news coming in here that Huma Abedin, longtime aide to Hillary Clinton, wife, of course, of Anthony Weider, is not flying with Hillary Clinton today. CNN's reporting. What's going on, Margaret?
Yeah, hi. Well, hi, Tom. Huma has been a constant on the plane with a couple of exceptions, including those initial days after her estrangement from Anthony Weiner was disclosed publicly. And she was with Hillary Clinton on Friday, but we have seen a drop-off since then. Her, as one of Hillary Clinton's closest confidants and aides, she has, you know, that sort of mantra of do no harm, and to the extent that that she would be a distraction in these final days. I guess she already is.
Is the Clinton campaign worried that this could deny them an election victory?
Of course, a corner of their mind is worried about that. What they have seen in these initial days, I think Friday was kind of the worst day because it was, what is this about? It completely blindsided them. They were literally on the campaign plane briefing reporters on their expansion of the state strategy and how they were, you know, was Arizona going to work, right? And they did not see this coming. They did not know this was coming. And so there was a mad scramble in that sort of initial 24 hours to try to get their head around what this could be and to try to figure out how to respond. What they have seen in these first few days afterwards is, number one, that decision to respond aggressively by Hillary Clinton was what the Democratic base wanted. Why does that matter? It matters because there's not that many undecided voters left, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that the real concern for Clinton is whether Democrats stay home or whether people who had pretty much decided, maybe not that enthusiastically, well, I'm going to vote for her because I don't want Trump, whether those people stayed home. So their goal was make sure no Democrats or no people who were going to vote for her stay home. And so their initial instinct was be very aggressive about their response. That's what she did for the first couple of days and has now shifted back toward her focusing on Trump and her own plans and having her surrogates kind of do the dirty work for her. What the early polling shows, and again, polling it's a snapshot in time. So it's only as good as the time during which it was taken. Mm-hmm. What that initial polling suggests is that this has had an effect of tightening the race, but that it may not have an effect of changing the outcome in battleground states. The Clintons and most Democratic strategists that I talk to think it's probably really Wednesday before they have a clear sense of whether their bet on that is right.
The Trump campaign clearly gleeful over this and trumpeting loudly, and Trump supporters saying, yes, we want to know more, but we're not going to know more before the vote, will we?
You know, at first it seemed like, no, they definitely wouldn't. But the FBI finally got its warrant, and we don't know all the ins and outs of how they can, you know, can they just, like, hit a control F, basically, and figure out if these are all duplicates, or is it a little more complicated than that? Some reporting suggesting there could be 600,000-plus emails there that have to be gone, that have to be at least check to see what's relevant and what's not relevant. These are Anthony Weiner's emails on his laptop, we believe, and so the expectation is that the majority of these, the overwhelming majority of these, are not pertinent to anything to do with the Clinton investigation.
But we'll see or won't see, but the timing is what it is. 8 days now until the election. Margaret Tolove, senior White House correspondent for Bloomberg, thank you very much for being with us, Margaret.
Thank you, Tom.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Goldman Sachs. Get insights from some of the world's leading thinkers on markets, industries, and the global economy in the firm's podcast, Exchanges at Goldman Sachs. You'll hear discussions on topics with far-reaching implications like climate change, autonomous driving, the future of China's economic growth, plus much more. That's Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play, and at gs.com/podcast.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Chance of lock her up at a Trump rally in Greeley, Colorado yesterday. We're talking this hour about the FBI stepping back into the 2016 campaign with talk of emails and Hillary Clinton. Could James Comey, looking back toward Clinton's email, change the outcome of this election? Could it change your vote? Here was Donald Trump in Las Vegas yesterday. Corruption, he said.
Although there is evidence of potential violations of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case.
Of course, that was not Trump. That was James Comey on July 5th saying no reasonable prosecutor would bring such case. Let's go to the Trump. And of course, at that time, he did not. Last week on Friday, letter to Congress said, well, we're looking over in this area again. Let's go to Donald Trump in Vegas yesterday saying this is evidence of dishonesty, corruption.
Hillary's corruption shreds the principles on which our nation was founded.
And let's go to Hillary herself saying, if we're going to get into this, let's put everything out there.
We don't know the facts, which is why we are calling on the FBI to release all the information that it has. Even Director Comey noted that this new information may not be significant. So let's get it out.
Of course, at this point in the campaign, with only a week and hours before the voting, it's not likely to all be out before voters are supposed to decide. Conference call on Saturday, Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta accused FBI Director James Comey of creating space for false accusations as the final days of the presidential race come to a close.
By providing selective information, he's allowed partisans to distort and exaggerate in order to inflict maximum political damage. And no one can separate what is true from what is not, because Comey has not been forthcoming with the facts.
We've got lots of callers here, and we'll come to you in just a moment, I promise. With us first from Washington, James Fallows, national correspondent for The Atlantic. He's been traveling all over the country reporting on the 2016 race. James Fallows, welcome back to On Point. Thanks so much for being here. What do you see in this latest development?
I think that the context that strikes me is one more step in just the assault on, erosion on the norms on which our democracy had depended for a long time. I mean, there is no undoing the fact that Director Comey's decision has change the 2016 election. I think the question will, in the long term will be whether there seem to be any good reasons for his having done so, and in the short term, how he can mitigate the confusing effect he's had. And it's striking to me that a number of Republican figures, including Alberto Gonzalez and Michael Mukasey, both, of course, who served under George W. Bush, have said this has damaged the process of the election. And I think the way to mitigate that most would be for him to lay his cards on the table and say, here is what we know, here's what we don't know, and let the next 8 days go on as they might.
But what about those Americans, and you could hear them chanting in Greeley, Colorado, who think there's been a miscarriage of justice here, who think that, you know, who suspect strongly that the private email server was misused, who have been told that there's been classified information that was badly handled here. I've been told more than that, it's criminal, and the locker up chants are hardly discouraged by the Trump campaign. But what about their sense of justice?
Sure. I think we have two both important but separable realms going on here. One is the people who are chanting lock her up, as you and I have both heard at these rallies, and who feel that the emails outweigh everything else that's at stake in this election, from its Trump's tax returns to his foreign policy to whatever. I think that whatever Director Comey might have said, if he said nothing, if he said she's entirely innocent, whatever he said was not likely to change their view. So in terms of practical impact upon that sector of the electorate, there's probably not much that would happen. I think the other thing that's going on is the process of deliberation. You know, the reason the Justice Department has an official policy that in the 60 days before an election, you don't talk about investigations, mm-hmm. that we've had so many figures from both Republican and Democratic administrations saying that this rips the fabric, is that it does just clarify, it does confuse things in a way that cannot be undone at this point. So in a practical, I think this is likely to make less practical difference than it makes cultural difference in the way that our institutions comport themselves around an election.
I mean, you may be right long term, but it would be a very practical difference if it changed the outcome of this election. James Fallows with The Atlantic, standby. Lots of callers here. Tim in Mount Jackson, Virginia. Tim, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Some of your guests I don't agree with. I'm a former federal employee, even though I'm supporting Trump. Obviously, lower-level employees are treated differently than higher-level employees. But wouldn't it just be a dog-and-pony show if they have a committee and the FBI director offers to, you know, assure them if new evidence that people inform them? You know, I don't think he's supposed to wait till after the election. That would look pretty shady. So, you know, all he did was say there's some new evidence they're going to look at, and that's what they're going to do. He still had to get the warrant and, you know, official things.
Yep.
And it's up to the Congress whether they kept it quiet or not, that committee.
Tim, let us pick it up. James Fallows, what do you say to that? He made a promise of transparency. He's delivered. Had to.
So it is I'll call not on my own authority, but that of Alberto Gonzalez and Michael mm-hmm. Mukasey, both attorneys general, both under George W. Bush, mm-hmm. both robust Republicans, who said that Director Comey made the wrong call, that there was a way he should have recognized the damage he would do here to the process of the election, and that whatever he might have been doing to protect his institutional – his individual reputation was outweighed by the institutional damage that he has done.
Let's go to Amelia in Charleston, South Carolina. Amelia, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My primary concern is what will happen November 9th. So suppose Hillary Clinton does lose the election, which up until now was not likely. But Jim Comey's new revelations look like she might. Does that give her fodder to say, well, this election was also rigged against me? And, I mean, those are allegations that only Donald Trump has made up until now. It really changes the fabric of democracy as we know it in the United States, just having these revelations out here, you know, in the last 10 days.
Amelia, are you suggesting that Hillary Clinton could end up being the one talking about things being rigged?
Possibly, if she loses. I mean, the other side has been saying that for so long. I mean, this is someone in the government that's actively, not intentionally, but his actions are actually playing against her.
Amelia, thank you for your call. James, what about it? Does this get to your assault on norms theme?
Yes, I think that that's a crucial point because it is the among the many things that Donald Trump has done that we've become used to but really are new in our politics is this drumbeat of saying things are rigged. Note how that theme has not been present in what Hillary Clinton or John Podesta or others have said in the last 3 or 4 days. They're complaining about individual judgments. They're complaining about press treatment. They're complaining about this or that. But they're not saying the system is rigged. And that is in the tradition of the choices that our past candidates have made when things have gone against them, when Al Gore conceded after the Supreme Court's decision in 2000 and everything that went before that. He said, I disagree with this decision, but I respect it. And now George W. Bush will be our president. When Richard Nixon had all of his travails in 1960 against John F. Kennedy with their controversies over the Illinois vote count, Nixon did not say this was a rigged election. And I'm talking about Richard Nixon now with this approach. So I think that it's a sign of respect for the process that we have not heard the rigged rhetoric from the Clinton camp.
Here was Hillary Clinton yesterday. This was at Wilton Manors in Florida. And, of course, she's trying to take it big, take it broader, not get dragged down on this point. Of course, she wouldn't want to be. Here she is.
There's a lot of noise and distraction, but it really comes down to what kind of future we want and who, as our president, can help us get there.
And Tim Kaine at a rally in Michigan yesterday, standing by his candidate and telling supporters, keep your eyes on the prize.
Are any of you going to be distracted? Any of you are going to take your eye off the job at hand, which is producing an engaged electorate that will turn out and make the pick that we have to make in terms of our nation's next leadership. Ready? Nobody's going to be distracted, right?
Do not be distracted, he's telling the Democratic crowd right there. Matt, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Matt, thank you for calling. What do you see?
Hi, Tom. Hey, I haven't seen anybody discussing the fact that Hillary Clinton got herself into this whole shindig in the first place. James Comey didn't get her into this. If she had kept, classified and top secret information on government servers per the statute, and, I'm former military, former government myself, and I'm very familiar with these statutes because they pummel them into our brain every year.
Yeah.
And if she had followed those, none of this would be an issue right now. And this is classified information we're talking about. They don't classify, dinner menus and travel arrangements for the day. And this is information that in the wrong hands gets people killed or gets our country attacked. And here it is on Anthony Weiner's laptop.
Well, we don't know what's on that laptop. We don't know at this point much of anything. I guess we'll find out sooner or later. Maybe not. James, what do you say to Matt?
So I think there's a very important point on the classified information point. To the best of my knowledge, everything we are discussing that is in terms of classified information was something that was classified after it passed through then Secretary Clinton's private email server. Mainly this involved drone programs. And from everything I've been able to see, this were things that were classified after she saw them as opposed to having, nuclear plans or something. I wrote only 3 or 4 days ago in keeping with the caller's point that this is something that Hillary Clinton could have saved herself at the beginning if she had followed different email protocols. I think the Clinton camp's response would be if they weren't going to attack me on this, they would attack on something else. But it's true that in this case, she has herself to blame for the origin of the story.
And now we've got Mike Pence, Donald Trump's running mate, of course, this is yesterday on Meet the Press, saying Hillary is – the language gets flipped every which way. Hillary is the risky candidate.
You see the polls closing in states around the country. The American people are focusing on the big issues in this country. But frankly, I think they've also come to the conclusion that Hillary Clinton is a risky choice to be the next president of the United States.
James, where does this leave us? You've got big crowds saying lock her up, and they've been doing that for months. Well after James Comey said there was not enough there for a prosecution. Now here we are with 1 week. Whatever the outcome, you're looking at the health of democracy itself here.
So I'll give you a positive reading and then a less positive one. The positive one is for the past few years, as we've discussed, my wife and I have been traveling around the country reporting on sort of civic level America at the smaller scale, whether it's in Dodge City, Kansas or Fresno, California or all the rest. And if you look at American culture at that level, it actually is largely functional in the way we'd like to think of people looking beyond partisan divides and finding practical ways to do things and all the rest. So I think that the actual function functioning tissue of America is there. At the national level, however, this election, however it turns out, is doing a lot of damage to the norms on which we've depended to get things done, not the rules, but the customs of how you treat your opponent and how you get together after the results of an election. So I think there will be considerable work to do collectively to see, can the democracy repair its operating rules, its operating understandings?
But, I get the custom of not getting in there right before the election, but what if there turn out to be emails on Anthony Weiner's computer that he shared with Huma Abedin that are incriminating and that had been kept off the table in the home stretch to the election, James?
If that were so, if it turns out in the full view of history that Director Comey did the right thing because there was something really important here that ends up showing that Hillary Clinton, put the security of the United States at risk, then there is a process known as impeachment. If she became president and then something comes out that is really terrible, she could be impeached for that. But that is something – and even if Director Comey had not made this announcement, that would still be the case. If he had kept quiet, the election went ahead. If she won and then bad information came out, there is a remedy.
I mean, I don't know if you saw on the Sunday shows yesterday, but there was a Republican congressman who – I think it was a Freudian slip – but he used the word impeachment before he turned around and pulled it back as if that's already – out there. I mean, maybe that's where things would go. But it also, talking about even that on the very eve of the election, takes us into this territory of where's the solid footing for our democratic process?
The precedent for this, I think, would be Mitch McConnell, then the Senate Minority Leader, saying as soon as President Obama was sworn in, perhaps even before he was sworn in, saying that the main goal of the Republicans in the Senate was to make Barack Obama a one-term president. Partisan disagreements are important, but there had been until recently some area of operating comity and understanding. I mentioned in a recent Atlantic piece that three of Ronald Reagan's Supreme Court nominees, I think it was Scalia, O'Connor, and Kennedy, were all approved by unanimous vote in the Senate. Every single Democrat voted for them. And so it is hard to imagine that happening again, but something closer to that could be useful.
How would you advise Americans to think about what Comey's just done here? If the director's going to step up, send the letter, knowing pretty full well that it will go out, that leaves individual citizens to weigh what they're looking at here.
I guess I would. I think there's a large category of citizens on either side who have made up their minds. They are for Donald Trump and what he stands for. They are against Donald Trump and for Hillary Clinton and what she stands for. And I think they will be they will have already voted and will vote still. I think for anybody who is still undecided, I think the question is one of proportion. You take the worst possible construction and what is known about Hillary Clinton, even granting these emails, and you take what is known about Donald Trump from his refusing to release his tax returns, something unprecedented in the last half century, from his comments about foreign policy to the level of knowledge he's displayed, and you weigh which is the better for the Republic. My magazine, The Atlantic, for only the third time in its history, decided in this month's issue to endorse a presidential candidate, and we said that Donald Trump's disqualification by temperament and knowledge outweighed any of the defects that Hillary Clinton had. So we said, do not vote for Donald Trump, do vote for Hillary Clinton. But that's the assessment I hope any undecided citizen will make.
Who knows where this goes on this side of the election, on Election Day. On the other side, it was House Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte of a Republican out of Virginia with that Freudian slip, I guess, of impeachment already over the weekend, a week and change before the election. James Fallows is national correspondent for The Atlantic. James, thank you very much for being with us today.
Tom, nice to talk to you again.
Listeners, a lot to contemplate here. Good luck with that. You can continue this conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Caitlin O'Keefe, Maeve Pagès, Sarah Platt, James Roths, and Abby Ruzica, with help from Halima Gikande and Weihua Li. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.